once you get that family, once you get those kids, and you start seeing people who are 10, 20, 30 years ahead of you, and they're still in that same job, they need that job. And if something happens to that job, they're in bad shape. I can't have that future.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Grit. I'm Neil Timmons. I'm excited to have Cale Delaney here. Let me give you a little of his background. He went to work right out of college in commercial real estate as a broker. That was in the 2006 era. And right after the crash in 2008, he went into construction management. He still works there as a senior project manager, has won multiple international project awards. He's been investing now for about 2 years. He's got a total of 11 units, including 5 cabins in the Smoky Mountains, a beautiful section of this country I haven't been to. He's grown his portfolio from about $300,000 in value to over $4 million. He's replaced a six-figure income. He's grew his net worth to become a multimillionaire in less than 2 years. So I'm excited to have him here. It's going to be a fun story. Cale, how are you? Welcome.
Good, Neil. Great. Thank you very much for the invite.
Yeah, you bet. So tell me, we all have a different journey in terms of how we stepped into this industry. You got into it right after college. What prompted you to enter the real estate industry?
Yeah, right after college. Really, it was during college that when I was studying engineering, just through internships and whatnot, I kind of realized it wasn't what I wanted to do. And I started just getting an interest in investing in general and a little bit specifically into real estate. Yeah. And so I had started actually working part-time for this brokerage my senior year and then just went full-time into it afterwards. And I was just kind of following the money, so to speak. And you just look at who's wealthy and more often than not, it has something to do with real estate. So I figured, let's get going something in that realm.
Right. Yeah.
And it was a learning experience. I did not enjoy the brokerage aspect of it, but I met some really great people, learned a lot. And it was just a bad timing thing once 2008 rolled around and, you know, not being in love with that specific aspect of the real estate industry. And so I put it on hold, you know, as I jumped ship into construction management and didn't pick it up until, like you mentioned, about 2 years ago, which is, you know, what is that, 15 years later or something.
Right. Well, tell me this. I got 2 questions for you on this point. How'd you choose the commercial real estate industry as your entry point to real estate, to a job versus residential?
I think it just was, it kind of bigger is better.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that was really it. It was a little bit, it seemed a little bit more glamorous than residential real estate because, you know, you're dealing with investors and not people just looking to buy a home for themselves. Right.
What had, you mentioned you didn't care for it. It wasn't a true love for you. Why?
Cold calling.
That
I would say would be the number one thing. I did not enjoy the cold calling. And it's with that industry in general, you know, whether it's being a real estate sales agent, a broker or whatever, your time is your value, right? And correct. So you're going to be dealing with a lot of tire kickers and people that are not going to value your time as they should. And so it gets a little frustrating.
Yeah.
And just with the market condition at that time, it wasn't as lucrative as kind of had hoped it was going to be. And so just really didn't make sense for me anymore once the market dried up.
Sure. Yeah. It was a very challenging environment to be in. And certainly in there in Florida, I had another friend of mine growing up with, who was in there in Florida at that time. No, I totally understand. It was a tough spot for everybody to be in. All right. So you go on this hiatus and you decide to get back in. What was the genesis of that to get back in?
Yeah, that really was the birth of my son. You know, he's a little over 2.5 years old right now. And after he was born, it was just kind of a real 180 degree shift in everything, even just from my schedule. I mean, it went from go to work, come home in the evening, go to the gym, have dinner, go to bed to, okay, well, if I want to be able to do any of that stuff, it has to happen before work. So now it's getting up at 5 a.m., go to the gym, taking care of all this stuff before work so I can spend time with the family afterwards. You know, so it started with that and it just got me thinking of, I need to start building something for the future for my family. And I can't be an employee for the rest of my life here.
That was your firstborn?
That was my firstborn. We have 2 older kids that are my wife's from previous marriage, but he was our first together, my firstborn. It's so
not the same with a newborn, is it?
It is not the same.
My brother is having his first. they're a couple of days past due at this point. You know, he's keeping me apprised of what's going on and them prepping and everything. So he keeps like, oh, we don't know how many we want to have, et cetera, et cetera. He said, you know, all my friends tell me that going from one to two, that's like the game changer. And I have three. And he's like, it seems like go to two to three for would be the game changer because you go from man to man to zone defense. I said, hey, I don't know which one of those is true, but I can tell you going from zero to one, that's it. That'll right. That's the one that changes your world upside down forever yeah. and never come back from it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of positives, of course, but you're right. It's how do I get things done? You have a new norm.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it shifts your way of thinking, just as you said, too. I got a plan for the future. And your mindset was, I can't be a W-2 employee forever. But that doesn't necessarily mean for you to quit the W-2 job and go jump in head first. It meant, sounds like, to do this strategically and enter into this. And you did it with, was your first entry point one single family in your backyard?
You know, the first one really was, you know, I had bought my first home when I was, I think, 25 or 26, yeah. And that was back in 2009. And I stayed there for, I think, like 12 years. And then once I got married and we had the two older kids, we had to get a bigger house and moved out and turned that one into a rental. So it was kind of by default. I had that first technical rental. But then once our son was born and kind of had that mindset shift and I went really all in, we ended up getting a fourplex was the next deal, actually.
The next one.
Locally. Yep.
Yeah.
So that was really like the first true investment property with purpose.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place. Batchleads.io. Batchleads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batch Leads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month.
At that time, how did that feel? Were you scared? Were you excited? What was that like to get in there and get your first place?
Oh, yeah. It's all of the above, right?
Yeah, right. Yes.
You know, it's definitely scary writing that check for the down payment. It's probably the biggest check that you've ever written before. You don't know the full process. You know, I'm big on research and preparation and analysis and all that stuff. So, I mean, I'd done my listening to podcasts, my reading books, my deal analyses, multiple offers, all that stuff. So, I had a good feel and a good basis on things. But still, I mean, it's once it becomes real, you certainly have those fears of the unknown. But they quickly subside, right? Once you get through that first deal, they quickly subside and you kind of get hooked on it.
Yeah. All right. So you get the fourplex. Where do you go after that?
So after that, that was June of 2020 that we closed on that fourplex. So again, this is good. We went under contract right after COVID, you know, really kind of slammed down. So a lot of uncertainty on things. And, you know, my initial goal was, or plan was to go with the small multifamily and long-term rentals. And after seeing that we had some troubled tenants initially, and it was a little bit of a pain in the butt, and seeing that the returns aren't that great, I was a little disenchanted with it after that. I can see the path forward with that, but man, it's going to take a long time. Yeah. It's going to take a lot of units. There's got to be something better. And so I kind of had a little bit of shiny object syndrome. I mean, for the next 6 months, the rest of that year, I was kind of looking at a bit of everything. I was looking at self-storage, residential assisted living, syndications. I mean, just anything heard.
Yeah. Well, it sounded like to me, you were trying to find a better path.
Right, exactly.
And so you were evaluating anything that might be that better path.
Right, right. And I kind of stumbled across the short-term rentals, which is kind of how I've gotten to where I am now from another podcast. I heard that podcast and it sounded too good to be true to almost. And I didn't even know where the Smoky Mountains were. You know, so after that podcast, I literally Google mapped it. It was right before Thanksgiving and I had that week scheduled off for work, but we didn't have plans.
Yeah.
And so I saw it was within driving distance. Yeah, right. You know, I say that, you know, in quotes.
Yeah.
16 hours.
Yeah. I was going to say, I know it's a trek from where you're at. Yes.
And that very next week we packed up the minivan, drove out there, scoped out properties, met realtors and within, I think, a month or less after that trip, we were under contract on the first one. And then it's snowballed since then.
It's beautiful there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's a very beautiful place. Lots and lots to do. It's very, very touristy, which is
very
short-term rental industry.
I was there in the middle of COVID, maybe the tail end of 2020 or somewhere in that range. Where I'm from is all masked up, and I get there and COVID didn't exist, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're very right. Yeah. Tennessee is a very laid-back state. So, which I like. You know, I think it's great. So.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's tremendous. For some people who don't know enough about the short-term rental industry, maybe, you know, what are the top two or three things they should know if they're considering going into it?
Sure. From the pros, it is probably the best asset class in real estate for the amount of return that you can generate. I mean, for cash flow, again, I just don't think there's another asset class that can beat it.
Yeah.
So it's an excellent investment to turbocharge your cash flow if that's what your goal is.
Yep.
From the con side, it is not passive. It is an active type of investing. It does take work. Now, there's a great variety of how much or how little time you put in, and you can put in as little as you want or as much as you want, but it is going to take some work. It's not as bad as you may think, but it's not going to be totally carefree and as little as a long-term rental or something like that might be. So I'd say those are probably the two main things. And then maybe just the third would be that you have to commit to that industry or that business because it's a hospitality business is what it is. And so you are delivering a service to people and they have expectations, right? And so you need to understand that you are going to have to deal with people, guests that may be demanding, right? That some may be gracious, some may be not so gracious, but that is the business that you've chosen if you choose to get into short-term
rentals. I think the best way I've heard it described is you don't have tenants, you have customers.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What's financing look like on one of those? Just traditional?
Yeah, there's lots of variety of options out there, just like anything. One of the best products that you can get and that a lot of people utilize is your first property in a separate market. You can utilize a second home loan.
Second home loan, yeah.
And you can get in with 10% down. And it's conventional financing, so the terms are
30-year fixed.
Right, 30-year fixed, still you know, decent rates. You know, of course, rates are increasing at this time. But so that's a popular product that people utilize for the first one. And then you can keep repeating using that as long as it's in a different market. But beyond that, me personally, I've used just standard conventional investment loans with 15% down because I'm still in all pretty much the same market.
Yep.
But yeah, there's other ones which I'm getting into at this point because I've tapped out on my debt to income ratio, but there's debt service coverage ratio or DSCR loans that just look at the property's income and not your debt to income ratio. So there's lots of different options out there.
Yeah, no, that's great. Circle back to management. It's hands-on, if you will. How do you handle that? You don't physically live in the same, you don't live in the Smoky Mountains. You're 16 hours away, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Pedal to the metal, 16 hours away. How do you manage it? How do you handle it?
Technology is your friend. So the beauty of it really is that as long as you have this little thing right here, you can manage it from anywhere in the world, which is a really amazing, amazing thing that it allows you that freedom. So there's certain software that are going to be essential, dynamic pricing software, which changes the pricing on a daily basis based on market demand and factors.
Yeah.
That's critical. And then a PMS or property management system, which is going to sync your calendars between the different platforms like Airbnb and Vrbo, have the abilities for automated communication and messaging and all these various other things. So really with those two pieces of software, it can really automate 90% of the whole process. And from there, it's a matter of then getting your boots on the ground. So having your cleaner and your handyman, and then, you know, some of the various other specialty contractors you're going to need, plumbing, electrical, whatnot. So having those contacts and having your solid cleaner and handyman, again, it's not as bad as you, or as scary as you might think with managing something out of town. It's actually, I much prefer that than to having something local.
A friend of mine said this, I think I owned just a handful of single family homes at one, at the time he told me this. He said, I own so many single family homes now that I will go out of my way not to drive past the house. Because inevitably, you're going to see something because they don't maintain it like you. You're going to see something. You're going to want to call your management team and you're going to want to have something done and you're going to spend up spending money just to make yourself feel better.
It's 100% true. And in fact, right now, I'm sitting in the one short-term rental that we have locally here in South Florida. Because like I said, we got three kids, so there's no peace and quiet in my house.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, exactly that. You know, you walk in the door and you're just looking, you're like, what? I know there's something that they didn't take care of.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly right. Totally right. How challenging was it in order to find the cleaner, in order to find the handyman?
It is challenging. It is challenging. And each market is different. Something that's a very heavily tourist market like the Smokies or some other of these hot vacation markets. The good thing is that the infrastructure is there and that there's more cleaners or handyman than you could possibly want.
Right.
The challenge is there's not a lot of good quality ones.
Yep.
So it's very difficult to know if you're getting a quality one or not. So in fact, just yesterday, I had to fire one of my cleaners and bring on another one. So it does happen. There is some turnover and that is challenging. But again, if you're in a market where there's a plethora of people, it's just a matter of trial and error. This one locally here, it's not in a very popular short-term rental market. There's a few. So it was difficult finding a cleaner that knows how to do a short-term rental clean. It's very different.
Not the same.
Right. So we actually had to train them and they're awesome. I mean, I wish they were in Tennessee. I mean, they're fantastic here.
Yeah.
So it kind of does have that benefit. If you can train somebody to do it the way you like, it almost is easier than finding somebody who's kind of already got it ingrained, their habits and whatnot.
Yeah. Through the course of the last 2 years, building this from starting with the 4-unit to get into the portfolio where it's at today, from the outside looking in, everybody would go, he's killing it. He's doing great. But I know from doing it myself and from talking to everybody in the industry, you know, it's not that easy. There's always bumps and bruises and you kind of learn things as you go. Have you been faced with any challenges that you've had to overcome?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, and I mentioned this to you earlier, and I've been on a few podcasts and I'm active in some various forums, you know, real estate investor forums and stuff. I've kept it kind of close to the chest on some of the personal challenges that we've had throughout these past couple of years. But, you know, I thought that this podcast, I mean, being named Real Grit, it might be the opportune time to kind of share a little bit of it to hopefully encourage some people, because getting into this industry, if you're truly looking to make a life-changing change, it's going to take a lot of sacrifice, number one. So you got to be prepared for that. You got to have a strong why, your reason that you're doing it, because when those challenges come up, man, it's easy to quit. Right? It's easy to just say enough of this and walk away.
Right.
So you got to have a strong why that you're doing it to get through this. And so not to go through a ton of detail, but so like I said, in June of 2020, we closed on that fourplex. Yeah. And then in February 2021, we closed on the next deal, which was the first cabin in the Smoky Mountains. Yeah. And then March of 2021, we converted this unit that I'm in right now, which was a long-term into a short-term rental. And in the middle of that conversion, you know, which my wife and I were doing on our own, you know, coming over in the evenings and, you know, painting and setting up furniture and whatnot. Yeah. My wife, you know, she's from Ecuador and she had planned to go to Ecuador for a couple of weeks. It's supposed to be for 2 weeks.
Sure.
And during that time, she ended up having a medical procedure done there and it went bad. And so what was supposed to be a 2-week trip for her actually ended up being 4.5 months that she was stuck in Ecuador through some really terrible situations. She ended up having to get 2 more surgeries there that were still bad. And so in the meantime, like I said, I was in the middle of converting this one unit, just got this other cabin up and running. We were under contract on 2 more cabins. I've got 3 kids. I'm working my W-2. And now we've got this thrown in our path here.
Yeah.
And so that was a point where it would have been very easy to say, okay, there's too much going on right now.
Right.
We need to pump the brakes and we'll get to this later.
No one would have blamed you.
Right. Exactly. But I was so set in my mind that, and I had seen already the fruits and seen that this could get us to where we wanted to be.
Yep.
I couldn't turn back on it. Thank God I was able to get some help. We actually flew in my father-in-law from Ecuador for a couple months to help out with the kids.
Yeah.
We ended up sending our 2 older kids for a period up with my parents in New Hampshire because the kids were doing school online at that time with COVID.
Right.
But there was a period where it was me alone with our 2-year-old trying to work a W-2, trying to manage these cabins, trying to set things up and take care of a 2-year-old by myself. And so it was a very extremely stressful time. And then even after those 4.5 months, when my wife was finally able to come back, literally the day that she came back and I saw what her condition was, we went to the emergency room. It was that bad. So it's almost a year later from this and we're still dealing with this. She just had 2 more surgeries.
Wow.
So it's been a real terrible personal journey through this past year, but still stuck through this and we've pushed forward. And during that year, I mean, we added on 4 more right. cabins. So I bring that up at this point, you know, like I said, I've kept it kind of more close to the chest, but I bring it up at this point because I don't find my story particularly special or inspirational myself, but people have come to me when they hear my story and they say it's encouraged them and inspired them to finally get going or whatever. And so I felt it was kind of necessary to share some of the true life behind the scenes struggles that people really go through, because when you hear it on the podcast or on forums or something, it's mainly successes that you're hearing about, right? You're hearing about this great deal that you got, or, you know, whatever, you just made this sale or whatever.
Everything on Facebook is a success.
Right. Exactly. You know, and you never hear the real struggles or the real sacrifices that people have to make to get there. So again, I bring it up not as any type of pat myself on the shoulder, more for people who are going through stuff, because everybody's got their stuff.
Yeah. No, everybody's got their stuff. You're totally right about that. You open with getting into this industry is not necessarily easy, and you got to have a big why. Maybe who has what did Nietzsche say? If you've got a big enough why, you can conquer anyhow.
Right.
So my question to you is, what was your why? Because you made it through a lot of how.
Yeah. My why was my son and getting out of, you know, he's the end goal, right? The intermediate steps, you know, we're getting out of my W-2, getting financially free so that I can spend time with him and that we can, you know, have experiences, we can travel, we can have freedom. That ultimately was my why. And I knew that if I gave up, you know, I had made it far enough to, again, see the fruits and see a clear path, that if I gave up at that time, it was going to be so hard to get back into it. Yeah. And I would have so much regret and so much guilt for doing that, that it would just be so much worse off.
Do you think that if you had given up, you would have been failing your son?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think that the birth of your son then, you know, you've got a gap where you touched the industry and then didn't enter back in industry until you were doing it for another person, that you value ultimately, you know, like so many parents, you value your son really greater than you valued yourself?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That otherwise you would have perhaps done it too. I mean, the why is that big.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of go to the extreme on some things. Like I said, I jumped into this real estate and really scaled things pretty quickly. I mean, I went from a period of 2 years, went from single to married with 3 kids. You know, so there's a lot of very fast-paced, life-changing events, you know, over the past several years. Yeah. I think back that, when I was single, there's not much to think about, right? I mean, you can think about your future, and I've always been very fiscally responsible and things like that. But there wasn't a real pressing motivation to say, hey, I need to get out of my W-2 and find financial freedom, right? It was, I could survive as a W-2 employee for the perpetual future, right? But once you get that family, once you get those kids, and you start seeing people who are 10, 20, 30 years ahead of you, and they're still in that same job, they need that job. And if something happens to that job, they're in bad shape.
Right.
And to see that, this can't happen. I can't live like that. I can't have that future.
Right. It's not that W-2 is a bad thing. It's that your inability to have the freedom to get out of that, should you so choose, that's the problem. That's the bad piece. Do whatever you love. If it's a W, it doesn't matter what it is.
Oh, absolutely.
But anybody being stuck in a spot where they don't want to be doing what they do, but they have to do it, that's a tough rock, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you're in a W-2 that you enjoy, I mean, by all means, keep going at it as long as you can. That'll just allow you to bank up money and scale even faster, right? And then you can break free when you want to break free.
Knowing what you know now, what would you have done differently back in, you know, looking back to 2006, getting out of school?
Oh, man. Just like everybody, wish you had gotten started sooner.
Yeah.
Especially at that time. I mean, my goodness, I would have started buying things in 2008, 2009. That'd be excellent. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, hindsight.
Even right. Exactly. I mean, even now, you know, there's always a good time and a bad time, depending on the market cycles, but there's never, I don't think it's ever a wrong time if you have your goals clear and you're disciplined.
Right.
So I know there's a lot of uncertainty and speculation on what's going to happen with the real estate market now, interest rates going up, you know, prices of properties are going crazy.
Yep.
And a lot of people are getting pretty scared of what may come. And by no means do I have a crystal ball, but I still feel that there's definitely deals out there that, again, if you're disciplined and do your numbers and what makes sense for you, that it's not a bad time to get started even now.
Yeah. When it comes to building your business and surrounding it around your lifestyle, what does it look like going forward for you? What does this year look like? And, you know, looking out a year or two or three years, what's it look like?
Well, my immediate goal this year is still to leave the W-2, and plan was to leave that sooner, but because this medical issues are extending, yeah, you know, mainly for the health insurance. Reasons, we're you know, we're sticking with it.
Yep.
So as soon as that clears up enough, then the plan is to quit the W-2. And from an investing perspective, I am still looking to actively acquire some more short-term rentals. My plan is for maybe another 2 to 3. And then I do want to shift focus to some more passive investments. Hmm. I've kind of got my eye more so on some larger multifamily or self-storage through syndication. So I'm starting to kind of dabble in the research on those asset classes now. But for the time being, yeah, I want to continue to bolster that cash flow a bit more and then start that transition into some more passive activities.
Yeah, that's great. Let's do this. I want to move to the final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Your favorite quote, I want to build a life that I don't need to take a vacation from. The author is unknown, but what about that resonates with you?
I think a lot of people who are in those W-2 jobs that tend to feel kind of stuck, which is why people want that. They desire the freedom of when you break free from it, because especially in this country, and the mentality is work, 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 right? And it's almost kind of looked down upon when you take a vacation.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. That's just the way, you know, it is here.
Yep.
So when you're working that life, what do? You work Monday through Friday, looking forward to that weekend, right? And then Sunday evening comes and you're all stressed because now you're looking at Monday, right? And then you're looking for that, maybe that 1 week vacation you have 2-3 months down the road.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be another 6-9 months before you get another 1 week. And it's just, again, that's one of the motivations for wanting to break free from the W-2 for me. So to me, that's what that quote means, is building that life of freedom where you don't need to live for a weekend. You don't need to live for a vacation. That every day is the kind of day that you want it to be.
Have you always had that perspective relative to a balance, relative to work?
No.
Or maybe my follow-up to that, or has your wife, the fact that she's not from here, culturally, it's extraordinarily different relative to the American culture.
Right.
She had a profound impact on your viewpoint there.
So yeah, by nature, I'm very hardworking. So to me, work is very important. Discipline is very important. Responsibility is very important. I have a hard time. It has a negative. I have a hard time resting, right?
Yeah.
Which can be a challenge. But definitely, you know, she's from Ecuador, and you know, prior to even us being together, you know, I'd done a lot of traveling in South America, and I just fell in love with that culture. Like you alluded to, it's a very, very different, very much more lighthearted and family and friend focused than work or money focused.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that culture is a lot more vibrant, and I'm definitely very drawn to that. I want to get my life a little bit more like that.
Their pyramid of values, if you will, looks very different than the traditional US pyramid of values.
Exactly. Exactly. And another quote that I came upon just this past week, which is fantastic. I loved it. It's actually from Steve Harvey. He said that instead of constantly telling God how big your problems are, you need to start telling your problems how big your God is.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. When he said that, I was like, oh my gosh, like that is convicting.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I just heard that this past week, and I've been like thinking about that so much, and it's so powerful from a mindset perspective. And so I wanted to share that because, yeah, that hit me when I heard that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to work on that.
Yeah. We'll be right back in 2 minutes. But first, a word from our sponsors. I've got a question for you. Are you enjoying the podcast? I sure hope you are. And if you are, may I ask you a personal favor? Would you mind going to iTunes and leaving a written review and a 5-star review? If you do that, send me a screenshot to my office. I want to send you back a list as a thank you. It's a list of the top 20 best lists to market to in order to find motivated sellers. This list has been curated by my office over years of direct marketing to sellers. This will either shortcut your path to finding the best list to start marketing to, or it's sure to add to what's already working. You can send that screenshot of your review to marketing@realgritpodcast.com. realgritpodcast.com. That's marketing@realgritpodcast.com.
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
My second question, what do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that is?
I think it's always fear.
Fear of what?
Fear of many different things. It's different for everybody. I mean, when you're first getting started, a lot of it, I think, is the fear of the unknown, right? You don't know what you're getting into. There's a lot of risk involved. Once you get started, I think those fears change. And Frank, I'm kind of in a period where, you know, I've gotten to a certain level of success.
Yes.
That like the next step seems so much bigger. It is almost like a fear of success in a sense, and feeling like you're not worthy
of
getting to that next level. Right. So I'm kind of in that, dealing with that right now myself. But yeah, I think it's just fear of different aspects, and that changes, you know, for each person and what stage you're in.
Isn't that so weird? Because that's simply an emotion, right?
Right.
There's no grounded logic in the fact that we as individuals shouldn't be allowed to get whatever success comes our way or whatever we create for ourselves. It doesn't matter what it is. It's a big one though. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, being on your podcast, being on some other podcasts I've been on, each time I get invited on a podcast, like I honestly don't feel like I'm really worthy of being on them. I listen to the other guests and things like that and hear these great stories and all these great success things. And, you know, I look at my path and where I'm at. And again, part of it's a personal thing. And, you know, looking at yourself and saying, oh, well, you know, you're not good enough.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I still struggle with that. I struggle with that a lot.
Part of that is to churn what you just said into fuel.
Right.
That propels yourself, and probably largely what contributes to your work ethic. Right.
Exactly.
But then wherever it rubs on a negative standpoint, you got to lean in and figure out how to overcome it one way or another.
Again, everybody is going to have some type of struggle, some type of fear, some type of excuse. And it's a matter of what you do with it. Just like you said, you can either let that determine your path and your future and beat you down, or you can put your nose down and just put in the work and bust through it and prove that you can do it and that you are worth it.
Yeah. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
Fitness and traveling. The gym is important for me, keeping healthy. Like I mentioned earlier, I get up super early now and go to the gym. I'm not a morning person still to this day, but just out of necessity, not just from the physical aspect, but it's just kind of, I've been doing it for so long now that it helps. It's kind of like a sanity check, especially with everything going on. It just kind of helps regulate things.
Yep.
And then traveling, which again is, you know, part of that why of wanting the freedom. I love traveling. I've always had this kind of wanderlust, and I've been to 20 different countries over the years. I've traveled extensively in South America. That's kind of my favorite area. So, you know, wherever I go now, I go down to South America. So I love traveling. I want to be able to do that more. I want to get the kids to be able to, you know, do that more and have experiences. And so it's funny when I think about things, because I grew up in a small town in New Hampshire, a little country boy. And to look back and look at where I am now, it's just interesting to me, you know, because again, a small town, New Hampshire, a small town, a lot of places, a lot of people end up staying there, right?
Yep.
And there's very few people that actually break free, quote unquote, and venture out. So I don't know. I just kind of look at myself a little bit as an anomaly in that sense of coming from that type of upbringing and then to where I am now and being as adventurous, having that wanderlust, going to the places, having the experiences I've had. I just find it interesting when I look back over my path, you know?
Yeah, wouldn't have guessed, right? Tell me, what's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
Right now, it's trying to help other people, what I call see the light, you know, of how you can have this freedom, like how you can make it a reality. In fact, I mean, just before this podcast here, I had a lunch meeting with a work colleague that, you know, I've become friends with over the past several years.
Sure.
And I've shared with him where I'm at and talked about real estate with him. And he's got an interest. He just doesn't know how to necessarily get started.
What the entry point is, right?
Right. And so just talking with him, helping, you know, showing him what the possibilities are, what the pathways are. And, you know, same thing. A lot of people reach out to me from the various podcasts or from the forums that I'm on and just asking again, how I've gotten to where I am. What would you do here? You know, can you help me with this? So I just find it very fulfilling and satisfying to be able to help people grow and help people break free and find that freedom that they're looking for. And so I don't want to say it's a true, I don't know if it's true passion of mine, but it's just, it's something that has really drawn me to the real estate industry as well, is that it's such a very sharing and plentiful mindset. industry.
Yeah.
The only one that I can think of where everybody is so willing to help and share and help bring other people up. It's pretty amazing. And so, you know, I want to be able to help other people in that same regard.
Yeah, that's tremendous. You definitely have a tremendous, unique personal story and candidly a personal struggle that almost none of us ever face or will ever face. And to have the intestinal fortitude to forge forward, knowing that certain things are out of your hands, if you will, and to control what it is that you can control and remember why you started in the first place, and to let that be the fuel that has lit your fire and continues to do so. It's a wonderful story. And to think that you're doing this all while working at W-2, this is to what you described in the replacement of W-2 income is your side hustle.
Right.
I mean, that is tremendous, and you deserve tremendous credit, and you're not giving yourself enough because it's a wonderful story in rare atmosphere for those who are actually able to achieve it, because doing it is nothing like talking about it.
Right.
So my hat's off to you for the success you've had and where you're headed, the impact you're making in your family and sharing your story, because I know from who I interact with in the community that this story and will make a tremendous impact in people's lives. It's inspirational.
I appreciate that. And I do need to share, and if I may, I am a man of faith. I do feel I've been very blessed throughout this whole journey and all these challenges. And you know, I think my faith has played a big part in that. And like you said, that understanding that some things are going to be out of my hands and that you just have to release that. I do give the praise and glory to God for helping me through this. Yeah.
If people want to connect, they want to find you, they want to follow you online, wherever, what's the best way or how can they in multiple ways do so?
Facebook is the best way. You know, you can find just Cale Delaney. And you know, like I said, I'm very active in a few different real estate specific forums. Feel free, excuse me, to reach out to me just through Facebook. Instagram, I do have an account for my properties and personally, but honestly, I'm almost never on it. So you can find me there, but I may not respond for a while. Facebook is the best.
I'll make sure we get the link to Facebook here in the show notes.
Yeah.
Cale, thanks for coming on and sharing your story. It's really been great.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Neil.
Absolutely. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.